Francesca, who will tell us about single and double soft gluon and graviton theorems. If you move over to the canvas theory, you get a variance of this on
good. I'll just type it. Now it sounds different. Well, it was a bit soft. Okay. Well, you knew all this already, so. Ja, jetzt habe ich es zu laut gestellt. Aha. Sollte ich jetzt weitermachen? Okay. Oh, Johannes is taking care of it. Good. So now we come to the subleading sector. And this is for the gravity for gravitons. This has only last year been recognized by Cachasso and Strominger in this very influential paper. In fact, in gauge theory, this has been known already in the early days, but it was rediscovered with novel methods by Casali. And the statement here is now that the universality and the factorization which we have for the soft function at leading order actually extends down to subleading orders in this small delta expansion. And what one encounters here is an object which I would like to call the soft operator, indexed by J, which indicates the level to which it exists, the level to which it is universal, which in gravity is J is equal to 2, and in Young-Wills J is equal to 1, and it depends, of course, on the soft and on all the hard momenta. And explicitly, what one finds are the following structures for the subleading and the sub-subleading soft operators, expressed again in the polarization and momenta language used here. And what the novel feature is that you now have differential operators in the hard data entering these soft operators. So what appears here in particular is the density of a Lorentz transformation acting on the amplitudes in this fashion. You can write it uniformly also for gravitons if you write the graviton polarization as a product of two vector-like polarization degrees of freedom. And these formula have been proven by using modern on-shell techniques such as BCFW or CHY. And these are the tree-level results. Now, in the paper of Cachasso and Strominger, it was claimed that in particular the subleading form and the leading form are related to a hidden symmetry of quantum gravity known as Bondi van der Burg Metzner Sachs, or BMS for short. Somehow 1B got lost in this symmetry, which goes back to 1962, so it's also a very old story. And this is a symmetry structure which people studying gravitational wave, classical gravitational waves, had discovered, namely that what you would naively expect is that in the scattering of classical waves you have a Poincaré symmetry, but in fact this is enlarged to this BMS symmetry. And on two slides, I want to give a short exposition of that. So what it is, this BMS group in four dimensions, so BMS4, acts at null infinity for configurations of asymptotically flat space times. And this can be made concrete if one introduces particular coordinates. So we use u for the time, r for the radius, and the angles theta and phi, together spelled out as x, as the parameterizing this two-sphere at null infinity. And then an asymptotically flat space-time can be described by this form of a metric with certain functions entering here. So you have a function beta, v, u, and a metric like GAB, which have a certain fall-off in R, so when you go to large radii. And so this behavior is spelled out here. So these are the various fall-off conditions. And the statement of a BMS4 symmetry is now that you can make transformations mapping such asymptotically flat space-times onto each other, which only act on the angular coordinates and on this function u appearing in here. And what are these transformations? So they are conformal transformations on the two sphere. So they map these pair of these angles into the prime ones with a wow factor, and the transformation of a U also carries this wow factor sitting here. In particular, if you take the trivial transformation for the angles, then what you have is something like a super translation in U. So you translate U by an arbitrary function alpha on this two sphere. And of course, as we have learned in string theory, it is very natural to go to other coordinates. So introduce these complex coordinates for the angles theta and phi. And then the generators of a conformal symmetry of the two sphere can be written as Virasoro generators, and the supertranslations generators then take this form. And the algebra is what you have a Virasoro algebra, and you have the way these supertranslation generators transform under L and L bar. You can restrict it to the Poincaré subalgebra by just constraining the integers n to run from -1 to 1. And similarly, the four translations are given by these entries here, so up to linear functions in Z. But you can also extend that to all integers, and then you have an infinite dimensional symmetry group. And the claim is that the super translations, so the generators of super translations, give you a Ward identity which can be understood as the leading soft operator in gravity, and the super rotations would correspond to the subleading one. This connection has been made concrete here. This one has not been fully proven so far. Good. So what's the status? So as I said, there was a large amount of work on this in the last year or so, and I'm trying to not forget anybody here, but whomever I forgot sits down here. So as I said, the subleading soft theorems have been proven using the VCFW recursion in the original papers, or using the modern CHY formula for tree-level amplitudes. But they also turn out to be rather easily determined by diagrammatics and gauge invariants, as was shown in these papers here. What is very interesting is that these soft theorems, in fact, hold in all dimensions. So their natural generalizations to D dimensions is true. The connection to BMS4 I already discussed. People have also looked at soft limits of string amplitudes. There's an underlying proposed twister string picture of this, which we will hear more of, I'm sure, by Arthur Lipstein later on this week. People have also looked at subleading soft gluon emission from fermions, and now recently double soft limits have been studied, and this will also be the subject of the second part of my talk. And similarly for this was just today, there was a paper studying this from open strings. Loop level is an entirely another level of complication, where so far, as I said, one knows that gravitons in the gravitational sector, there are no corrections at leading order, and the sub and subset leading order are corrected by one or two loop, and only by one and two loop corrections. For gluons, already the leading order is corrected. So the question here is whether there are deformations of these soft theorems. Good. So what I want to do now next is to discuss the work we've been doing in Zurich. In the last year, namely some very, very simple thoughts on these subleading soft theorems, and showing how they can be constrained just by general considerations. And the key question behind this little piece of work is that there is an obvious this balance of momentum conservation in this problem, because if I take an n plus 1 point amplitude, I take a soft limit, and I get something times an endpoint amplitude, but I have to take care of momentum conservation on both sides, and I have n plus 1 particle momentum conservation on the left-hand side versus n particle momentum conservation on the right-hand side. So expressed in formula, what are we facing? If I write the amplitude as its delta functional part and the stripped amplitude, then this is the form of the soft theorem. So if I take the soft limit of the leg Q, the claim is that I get some operator depending on Q and the hard momenta, and now here a d-dimensional delta, an n-particle delta function acting on the stripped amplitude. Now, there are two things you could contemplate. You could say variant A would be, well, I want to state the theorem really at the level of the stripped amplitudes. And then you have to take care of a problem that, you know, you want. So how do you conserve momenta? One variant would be, or a prescription to do that is, you shift all the hard momenta by something proportional to delta and secure that the sum of the PA and the PA tilde, for example, would be conserved. So you conserve the n and n plus one particle momenta at the same time. The variant B, and that's what I would say is the favorite one, is to really take amplitude seriously as distributional quantities, so they come with a delta function. And then the statement simply is that there is a non-trivial commutator of the soft operator with the delta function. Namely, if this relation here above is to hold true, we must have that if I act with a soft operator on the delta function, if I commute it past, it sort of has to shift the argument of the delta function proportional to the soft piece. And it could, of course, the structure of the operator could change, so S and S tilde might not be the same, but it turns out that they are actually the same. And in fact, variant B is equivalent to variant A, but it has some consequences. So what are the consequences? Well, simply, if you have such a non-trivial commutator, you learn two things. One, you learn that the subleading soft operators have to contain derivatives with respect to the hard momenta, and secondly, that these are actually constrained by the higher level soft operators. So, turning back to this sort of the key equation, at leading order there's no issue. So, if I look at the leading order terms in delta, knowing that S naught is just a function, it trivially commutes with a delta function. There's no issue, and you can take whatever you want. The problem or the subtleties arise at the next to leading order in the delta expansion, because here you then pick up, if you work this out, this commutator relation. So S1, so the corrected, so the NLO soft operator, has to have a non-trivial commutator with a delta function, which itself is proportional to S0 times the derivative of a delta function again. And that tells you immediately that S1 must contain differential operators with respect to the hard momenta, and that can be used to constrain the consistent forms of S1. You can go a step higher, and I won't drag you through the algebra, but it's sort of obvious you get a second order differential operator acting, which tells you that S2 has to be of second order in derivatives with respect to P. And if you look at the explicit result that we had, it in fact has that structure, right? So J is a linear, it contains linear derivatives with respect to P, and here's the J squared. So in retrospect, this is what you would have to have. In fact, there's the possibility, as I said, of a difference between these operators, but they turn out to be the same, as I said. Good. So the game now is to just collect all constraints that we have at our disposal, and feed in S0 and see how far we can get down, how far can we constrain S1 and S2. So what are these? They are, if you list them, they are quite a number. So this is the assumption that we have such a soft theorem acting to a certain order J, which I don't want to specify at this point. So first of all, I mean, the first clear constraints are gauge invariances. So if you do a gauge transformation on a soft leg, the left hand side is zero, as the right hand side depends on in its polarizations only through the soft operator on it. It's clear that if you act with this operator on Sj, it has to be zero. Actually, just equivalent to zero modulo Poincaré transformations, because they would annihilate the endpoint amplitude. Similarly, you have to have a hard leg invariance, and as the endpoint amplitude is gauge invariant in a hard, it should be an EA. It's gauge invariant on a hard leg, you need this simple relation. On top, you have the distributional constraint, which I already discussed, And what we now include is a key assumption, that of locality. Namely, we want to assume that the soft operators are, you know, can be written as local densities in the hard data, if you wish. So I sum from A to over all the hard legs, and the function is always just the soft function only depends on one hard leg at a time. At tree level, that's manifest. At higher loop, that's an assumption. And it is something you would expect from a word identity. Of course, you feed in mass, dimensions, and loop counting. I don't want to go through this. But the statement is, if you include all this, then this severely constrains the subleading soft function. And in four dimension, actually, it completely nails it down. And that little argument I want to run through. So let's go to four dimensions, and there, do it for gauge theory, for simplicity, and there, of course, it's very handy to use spinorhelicity. So the soft momentum, Q mu, I now write as the bispinor Q alpha, Q tilde alpha dot, and for concreteness, I consider a plus one helicity soft gluon, which is then described by this polarization vector here with mu, a fiducial spinner. And what you should do now, you know, feeding in all these things that you know, locality, it has to be linear in the polarization. It has to be a first order differential operator in P, which means now a first order differential operator in the lambda and lambda tildes, and little group scaling arguments. This is the only thing you could write down in such an ansatz, and they are with these functions here, omega and omega bar, and there are four undetermined local coefficients entering it. And now you feed in the constraints. Gauge invariance means that if you shift, I mean gauge invariance on the soft leg, if you shift the mu here by something proportional to Q, then you should get zero modulo Poincaré transformations. It's easy to see that when you do that, only the Z1s survive. And then this is the dilatation operator, which is even more than Poincaré. It's conformal symmetry, because the tree level gluon amplitudes are conformally invariant, so you can allow identical C1s in order for this to annihilate the endpoint amplitude. The distributional constraint now tells you that the commutator of the ansatz with the delta function, which gives you this if you work it out, has to be equal to S naught times essentially the derivative of the delta function plus an arbitrary function psi. And that, comparing this, tells you that Z and Xi has to be zero, and that the remaining undetermined two coefficients, C2 and C3, have to be either one or minus one, only for the neighboring legs. And that's it. I mean, that fixes everything. And you see that the unique result, which is compatible with Poincaré symmetry, with gauge invariance, with locality, and with the distributional constraints, is this subleading soft operator, which is exactly the object that has been found. Of course, this simple argument does not prove the soft theorems. It just says if there is a soft factorization, it has to be of that form. But this argument doesn't tell you that there is soft factorization at subleading order. And you can extend it to the subleading sector. No, sorry. Now we go to gravity, and I don't want to run through the same argument, but just sort of summarize what happens. Now you have the leading soft graviton function is spelled out like this. It now depends on two reference spinners, X and Y. This is for a plus two helicity soft graviton. And analogously, you would make an ansatz respecting the constraints, which should be a linear differential operator. And if you boil it down, you find four local constants, which again are completely fixed by the constraints. And then you'd find this form of the S1 for the graviton. And the same reasoning also allows you to determine the sub-subleading soft operator in 4D. Again, it doesn't prove, it just says if there is soft factorization, it has to be at the subleading order, it has to be of that form. Good. So, this is the summary of part one. So, I hope to have introduced to you the concept of soft gluon and graviton emission, which displays universal factorization at the subleading order. There's a claimed connection to a possible hidden symmetry in quantum gravity known as the BMS4 group. And we've seen that very simple arguments actually allow you to put strong constraints on the subleading soft factors, namely in four dimensions, everything is fixed, and in general dimensions there is a finite number of unfixed constants. You can apply this this method also to the question of the loop level, but I didn't have the time to cover that here. Also there you can put constraints on a certain subsector of loop level corrections to the subleading soft theorems, which are in this sector IR finite factorized contributions. But that's a rather technical subject, so I don't want to enter it here. Okay, so in the remaining 15 minutes or 20 minutes, I don't know, 15. This is cool. I'll speak about double soft limits now. So what changes now? I take two legs soft, and I ask a question if there's again a factorization into a universal soft piece. And what we will discover is that for gluons and gravitons, that there's not, there's an ambiguity in taking this limit. And the motivation is that that the soft behavior of S matrix elements is intimately connected to symmetries, and it might act, you would hope to use it as a means to potentially discovering novel hidden symmetries in the S matrix, as I was alluding at in the first part of the talk. And here, of course, what we would like to find from the amplitudes perspective is something structural, like how can we recover a commutator of two symmetry generators from the amplitudes. That's really my motivation here. A model of this is a very famous model is when you look at the soft limits of scalar particles, which are Goldstone bosons of a spontaneous broken symmetry. There one has the so-called Adler zero, that if you take a soft limit of such a Goldstone boson, the amplitude vanishes. And if you take a double soft limit, namely we put two scalars in and multiply their momenta with delta and take delta down simultaneously to zero, that, as was beautifully discovered in this paper here, you recover the symmetry algebra. So you get a kinematical factor which is antisymmetric, and you get this combination here of a structure constants hidden in this G over K broken symmetry structure with a generator T acting on the endpoint amplitude. And this has been demonstrated for soft pions, and very nicely one if you apply it to n equals 8 supergravity, you find the hidden E7 symmetry in the scalar sector there. So related works on double soft limits in supergravity theories and others are listed here. So supergravities with less supersymmetries were studied by these gentlemen. Scalars and photons in a bunch of theories appropriate for the description with the CHY scattering, the CHY formula were studied by Kashasohi and Yuan. And parallel to our paper, Volovich and co-workers studied the double soft gluon limits, and we did gluons and gravitons, which I'll now review. And as I said just recently, open string theory was studied in a similar setup, giving you gluon and scalar amplitudes in this double soft limit. Okay, so one thing I want to make, which I already alluded to at the beginning, is the fact that if you take now double soft limits in of gluons and gravitons, because the single soft limit does not vanish, there's an ambiguity on how you do that. And I would claim that there are two natural ways of performing such a limit, which we called the consecutive soft limit, short CSL, and the simultaneous soft limit, for some reason DSL, the double soft limit, which goes as follows. So for consecutive is, as the name says, you first take down, so you have two soft particles. Let's say you first take down particle two, and then you take down particle one. And naturally, this limit need not commute. So if you do it the other way around, you could define something like an anti-commutative consecutive soft limit. This will generically not be zero. A more democratic situation would be a simultaneous soft limit where you just introduce one scaling parameter delta and send that delta simultaneously down to zero. And that's, of course, the situation that has been used so far in the study of double soft scalar scenarios, because there the CSL is zero because the single soft limit is just zero. And so in the CSL scenario, you would always get zero, which is not the case here. Good. So what we have seen is that universality and factorization at tree level extends down to a subleading order. We studied it only to the first subleading order, so that you can now state a subleading double soft gluon and graviton theorems in the following manner. You have the CSL functions or operators and the DSL operators, and you have an expansion in delta. The leading pole will be 1 over delta squared, because every single soft pole gives you 1 over delta. So the subleading is then the 1 over delta piece. And as I said, there are two ways of doing this, double soft limit, and it's interesting to compare the two. So first of all, now we have to distinguish two situations on top, namely whether the two gluons or gravitons have the same helicities or whether they have opposite helicities. When we have the same helicities, things are very similar. So the leading double soft poles, the 1 over delta squared, is in all theories is the same. The subleading is the same in the sense whether I do CSL or DSL doesn't make a difference. This continues to hold for gravity at the subleading order, but not for Young-Mills at the subleading order. If you look at opposite helicities, then the structure is different. Gravity continues to be identical and starts differing at the subleading level, whereas Young-Mills is always different. And the motivation for us in setting up this formula is, at a later stage, not yet, we haven't yet mastered this, is that we hope to similarly be able to extract the BMS4 algebra relations from such limits. But for this, we have to understand better what's the right prescription. Good. So let's start with a consecutive double soft limit and discuss the general structure. So as I said, in principle, you don't learn anything new, because we already know the structure of a single soft limit. So if I take first two down and then one, it's just a concatenation of the already known single soft functions, and you can straightforwardly evaluate what it is. So if the CSL limit is, as I said, first take down delta 2, then take down delta 1, so how does that look? You act with the soft operator, where 1 is still considered as a hard leg, and then down here 1 has been removed, and you only have 3 through n as a hard leg. And what you see at the subleading order, if you expand this out to say S1 in normal brackets, that there can be a sort of a contact term where the derivative with respect to this claimed hard leg hits the later to be soft leg, right? So there's some structure emerging here. It doesn't happen at the leading order, but at the subleading order this can happen, and I've sorted things out here with this color coding. One more thing. After I took the limit, I set all the deltas equal to zero. So that's why I have an overall 1 over delta squared for CSL naught and a 1 over delta for CSL 1. And you see that the differential operators are always to the right, and there's a contact term, namely when the 1 in the S1 acts on the 1 from the S naught here. That's the new structure that you can get. Okay. So what are the results? We look at first at gluons, color ordered, and if we take the same helicities, this is the function you get. It's actually unambiguous, so the anti-symmetric combination vanishes, If you take opposite helicity, it does not, and this is the function that you find. At the subleading order for the same helicity, you have again a differential operator appearing, and for opposite helicities, you also pick up a contact term. This term, here you do not pick up a contact term. Contact terms you can always detect as terms which do not contain these derivative operators. When you go to gravitons, the situation is a bit more complex, but still quite transparent. Here, there is no ambiguity in the order of limits, first one and then two, or the opposite way for both orientations, same and opposite helicity orientations. And for the subleading order, we have this result for the same helicity, and for opposite helicity, I sorted them out in a symmetric combination and an anti-symmetric combination. And the anti-symmetric combination is now interesting because it contains this local part. So you can sort of detect again a density which you might hope to be able to interpret as some generator acting. So a natural thing would be to identify the A CSL maybe with a commutator structure here. Good. Let's spend the last 4 minutes on the double soft, the simultaneous double soft limit. And this we established both for gluons and gravitons using BCFW, which in some sense is a very natural prescription here because it singles out two legs in an amplitude, and we have two singled out legs, two soft legs. So why not just use that? So the thing is now in spinorellicity, of course, you scale the lambda and the lambda tilde of the soft legs with square root of delta. And you consider a 1-2 shift of this sort, and then on the face of it you have three classes of BCFW diagrams, the two distinguished ones where you have three-point functions on the left or on the right, and the generic one where you have this here, and I want to call capital I the total momentum of all these particles here except for one. And in fact, it turns out that in the generic situation, the BCFW shift makes a soft leg hard. So if you work out what the Z factor is, this is what it is. Pi squared is this thing. And you see, if that guy is non-vanishing, then this scales as 1 over delta, which makes the soft function hard again. And only in the case here and there, this does not happen. So that means if you want to study this limit, you only have to look at these extremal diagrams. And that's, of course, very, very good, because these extremal diagrams, make the origin of factorization and universality manifest, because what remains over here is then going to give rise to just an endpoint particle amplitude if you then take this like soft as well. So if you have the same helicities, okay, technically you discover that only the left diagram contributes, and you collect the following formula for the leading order DSL, same helicity. It's a product of two S-naughts, and the subleading is also a product of S-naughts, but it's not equal, whereas this one is the same, this is not the same as the consecutive soft limit. And there's a vanishing contact term here as well. When you look at gluons with opposite helicities, you have a sum of these two BCFW diagrams, and you pick up the following structure for the leading DSL limit. What is important to notice here, maybe, is that it has a non-local structure. So the hard particles are entangled. It's not something where you march through a single hard particle one by one. And at the subleading order, you get lengthy formulas like this, which are, not too transparent, I would say. Good. So one more minute for gravitons. Same helicity. It's the same mythology. So you just look at the same diagrams now. You just have to take care of complete symmetrization, of course. You find these results here, which are identical at all levels to the consecutive soft limit, as I said in the beginning. And when you take opposite helicity gravitons, then so mixed helicity gravitons, you have a leading order term like this, and the subleading term now also has a contact term, which I spelled out here, which again has a local structure, which is interesting if you want to represent it as a local density, and this gives you a difference to the CSL 1+2+. Generally, I would say, and that's quite interesting, I think, that the formula for the DSL are much nicer in gravity than they are in gauge theory, and that is most likely related to the fact that we use color decomposition, color-ordered amplitudes in gauge theory. When you throw in the color degrees of freedom, we are observing nicer structures. But this I don't have time to speak about because now my clock tells me I'm at zero, so let me summarize and conclude. So in this part, we introduced what we think are two natural ways of taking double soft limits in gluons and gravitons, which we termed the CSL consecutive and the simultaneous DSL limits. We have proven at tree level that there's factorization and universality at least to the subleading order. We have not gone further so far. Depending on the helicities of the soft legs, namely of whether they're the same or they're different, and on the spins, namely whether you consider gluons or gravitons, CSL and DSL can be the same, but generically are different. And moreover, generically, I would say the double soft gravity looks simpler than the double soft limited gauge theory. So, as an outlook, very last form transparency, what still has to be performed, and that's our initial goal, is to make a contact to the algebraic structure of BMS4, or even in the Young-Mills sector, as recently claimed, to Kac-Moody symmetries. The obstacle is that generically you have non-local forms of the CSL and DSL operators, and we have to understand better how to deal with that. An obvious question that comes to one mind is, if one listened to the first part of the talk, and that's something we have not studied, whether the subleading double soft operators are similarly determined by consistency conditions from the leading ones, as I was discussing before. Another thing is to rewrite everything in non-color ordered form. This gives nicer formula. And of course, one should also investigate the loop level structure, what is protected and what not, and maybe even more multi-soft limits. And then there are potential applications also to something more highly speculative, which I don't want to comment now because I don't have any time. So thank you for your...
Thank you very much for the talk. Other questions?
I have one question. Wouldn't it be more natural to study, instead of studying these two limits consecutive and simultaneously, to study the soft behavior as a function of the angle, how you approach the singular point? Then you have it for any special case you might want to consider.
You mean a function of angle between
delta 1 and delta 2?
Yeah. But this would still be simultaneous, no? Wouldn't it? I mean, what's the difference? I mean, you have two.
If it's simultaneous, you come along the diagonal. If it's consecutive, you come basically along the coordinate axis.
No, but I would still, I mean, okay, let's assume I would still, the length of these P's, I would still take to zero. The radius, I would take to zero at the same speed. So I have a Q1 and a Q2, and I'm just taking the length to zero. And the question is whether I take the length, this length down to zero first, or I take them together. You could think about different speeds, but I think that's equivalent to doing delta 1 first and delta 2. Maybe we can discuss it afterwards.
So how much of universality holds if you deform the Young-Mills theory or gravity by higher dimensional operators? Would you expect corrections at some level?
I haven't thought about it, but the methodology is pretty robust as long as you have a BCFW recursion. So any theory that displays BCFW recursible will have that properties. Sorry? Some of them are, but not all, right? Yeah. And these ones, I mean, at least for these where it works, it should go through.
Okay, final question.
So just a quick comment. You're probably aware concerning the loop level. This is known and understood to fail for massless particles. There is an interference of these next to soft structures with collinear poles, which will cause some modification of these theorems. So I don't.
For Young Mills.
I do not expect this to continue at loop level.
Yes, right? But for Young Mills.
For Young Mills.
Yes.
I'm talking about Young Mills.
Yes.
Of course.
But which we already have for single.
Gravity has no collinear divergences when you sum, so this phenomenon would simply not happen for gravity.
Yeah. Thanks.
I mean, I don't know if you have looked carefully at the last point that you made, but I have the impression that what they call soft is not in the same way that you call soft. At least that's my understanding.
I didn't make the point.
Eh?
Yes, okay, maybe, yes.
We have to discuss.
Yeah. They have some ordered limit. I looked at it.
They never have divergence.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there seem to be plenty of questions. Yes.
David says it's not important, so.
I was just wondering, in the context of gauge theory, how much of these, is there anything interesting in the structure in the collinear limits?
Is there anything interesting in the structure of collinear, I mean. Subleading collinear. I started thinking about this at some point, but I didn't get very far, but I don't know. I don't have anything to say.
Okay, before